T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mullion Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
That is the discussion. I mean, ultimately, the league as a whole is looking at about $4 billion of losses, and that's particularly hard on like teams like the Cubs. As you say, we do get 70% of our revenue from tickets, parking, concessions, game day activities, and only about 30% of our revenue from media. And that's only part of that is national media, so like the local television that we do. Now, we've already lost half that season. So in a best-case scenario, you know, we're looking at, you know, recovering maybe 20% of our total income. So that is where the rub is, and that's where the discussions roll.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Tom Ricketts. He, of course, is in charge of the Chicago Cubs. He is the chairman of the Cubs, the Ricketts family, owners of the Cubs, and kind of interesting to hear what he has to say. And David, you have done a great job of putting together the information, of doing the research and verifying all the statistics. And you know, I don't know that we come through this stuff with this great understanding of what teams go through, but certainly as we sit here broadcasting live from the Hyundai studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, you know, we have very little appreciation maybe for the amount of revenue lost this season by ownership, as opposed to the amount of revenue that players are going to lose, as opposed to the fact that neither of these sides seem very compelled to have a lot of sympathy for the other guy.
Well, what I did was what anybody could have done. It was also just it making things more plausible to accept. It wasn't necessarily proving anything except for using the facts that were out there. And the only facts that are out there are because the Atlanta Braves are a publicly held company and they have an obligation to file their revenue sources and the revenue every quarter. And they do that because of Liberty Media. And they are 12th in attendance, and they have 63% of the revenue last year was from the game day experience, which would stand to believe that Tom Ricketts' contention of 70% of the Cubs' revenue coming from the game day experience isn't an outrageous estimate. That's all we have, though, Mully, is an estimate, and that is the crux of the issue at hand. Owners are telling us what their financial situations are without opening the books in a way that the players union has been requesting for years. And they don't want to do that now because of, number one, they haven't done it before, but we're in the midst of a negotiation. But also, in the back of my mind, in the back of our minds, I think we're a little bit skeptical or cynical. Do they not want to open the books as well because they have a CBA that expires at the end of the 2021 season? And do you really want to show all your cards with that in mind? And is that reality affecting your thinking in this, you know, catastrophe? Because this is a catastrophe if you don't have baseball in 2020.
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, everybody seems to be of the belief that it does irreparable harm to the game. I'm not necessarily arguing that point. I just think that that there are such extenuating circumstances that while I want to see a baseball season, I'm not in a position to tell people hey, get back out on the field, because I just think that's unfair. And I think that the baseball needs to get the money straightened out and the compensation straightened out in the same fashion they need to get the concerns about the health straightened out. I just think that it's an important element of what they're going through, and something that unfortunately exposes the larger picture of distrust among the players vis-a-vis the owners. And I almost understand the distrust from the player's standpoint, mm-hmm. but I also understand that this is an opportunity. You know, you come back, you have a season, you play, you can help people. You know, it will be well appreciated if you can give us a distraction, if you can try to go about your job safely and try to give hope to people that the country can open back up and that we can get back to work and the economy can pick up and everybody can be somehow back to a version of normal that is acceptable.
Return to normalcy.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go there because I'm not sure that it's back to the same way things were, but sort of a different yet workable way that things are.
Fill a void. You know, do what everyone is asking you to do. But here's the thing. You know, we hear from the owners that, you know, they stand to lose more money by playing games without fans than if there weren't any games played at all. Maybe that's true. Maybe that isn't. Maybe you need to open the books to kind of prove that. So they have a lot to lose. But who has the most to lose in this, if the baseball season is canceled, Molly? I mean, is it the players or the owners? I know financially you can put a number on what every team could lose, and you know, you could put a number on the fact that Tom Ricketts suggests that the Cubs will only, you know, make 15% of the projected revenue without fans in the stands in a half a season of baseball. So they'll lose a lot of money. But what will the players lose? I mean, will this be the fight that they couldn't win? And how will we look at that? And does it matter if baseball isn't played in 2020? Does it really matter whose fault it is if we can't get it done? Because everybody loses in that scenario.
Well, that's it. I mean, I don't think that it. I don't think that anybody benefits. You know, you might say that the owners don't lose as much money as they're projected to lose. They could probably lose more money by playing than if they don't. But do they really? Because again, ownership is such a difficult thing to measure based on the idea that you have the product, that you own the product, that you still maintain it and own it. And if you come back and play, the product is worth more ultimately than it would be if you had yet another financial reason in the midst of something like this, which prevented you from playing. If you were viewed as, you know, avaricious to the point, unwilling to supply what the public wants, well, then why should they want to come back and enjoy your product? In some places, they certainly will. You know, the experience of a game at Wrigley is obviously something unique and different and, you know, a wondrous and glorious thing. The Red Sox will always have people showing up. It's an amazing experience to go to games there. The Yankees, I mean, we know who the money teams are and how they are capable of bringing in crowds and all the rest of it. But there are other teams that aren't as healthy. And certainly, I don't think anybody's folding. I think the value of the franchise itself could be affected. You know, I get it.
Without question.
Losing money is one thing, but losing that value is going to be something that would damn the league.
And, you know, as we go into – you know, the weekend and get ready for the next move in this. I mean, who makes it? You have villains on both sides. You know, people want to vilify, you know, the owners because they're greedy billionaires. And really, to some degree, it is hard to argue with some of those, you know, accusations or characterizations because, you know, they are, it's just, they're still going to be billionaires after this. And then you look at the players, the selfish players, the Max Scherzer talking about how they don't want to negotiate. And he's already made $109 million. So he's vilified to some degree because he's made a lot of money. What this equation needs, what this narrative needs, what this negotiation needs, baseball needs a hero. Baseball needs somebody that is going to step out and step up and say, okay, whatever make sense. Let's try to make this work. We understand both sides are losing something here, but we're going to lose a lot more if we don't play the game in 2020. Baseball needs somebody to be the voice. I don't know if it's the voice of reason or just a voice that promotes in the spirit of compromise, because we're not hearing that. What we're hearing is what we dreaded to hear, is that the public squabbling over private finances, and that is not beneficial to anybody in this.
No, and that's the thing. It's got to be found somehow within the game, though, because, you know, again, there's such disunity nationally, and there's such polarization nationally that nobody can step into the void and say, hey, you know, let me mediate this for you. Let me help you out a little bit. You can trust me. And that's really a problem for baseball, because I don't know if they can't resolve this thing themselves. I don't know what kind of idle threat or what kind of push from above can actually work to resolve the problem. I mean, it just might create more issues to begin with.
I don't think you need somebody from whatever, you know, arm of government or from someone from the outside necessarily to provide the nudge. I think you need somebody from within the game that understands both sides of the equation well enough to appeal to everyone's common sensibilities, because they need to be reminded on a regular basis about what could be lost by not coming up with a deal, rather than having these threats that are publicly shared about we're not going to renegotiate because we hate these terms and how insulting this was. I mean, that is typical rhetoric in the course of negotiations that you see all the time between, you know, players, unions, and management. But this isn't a typical negotiation. We're in the midst of a pandemic where the threat of losing a sport, you know, this season and having it harmed for the next several years is real. It's very real. And you have other sports coming back in the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, college football, we'll talk about in a moment. Where's Major League Baseball? Get on board. Get with the program. Get back in the stadiums, because if it's safe enough, and we have every reason to believe that it will be and it could be, and those safeguards are in place, then this can't stop. The momentum can't be stalled, and you can't have no baseball because of you're fighting over billionaires and millionaires. That is very, very bad luck for baseball.
Yeah, all you need is like the Mariano Rivera of commissioners to step in here and save the game.
Yes,
and unfortunately,
that's all.
I don't know. Adam Silver seems to have his plate full, but he needs to come in and resolve this thing. That's what you need. You need somebody that people can trust and believe in, and has
that's what I mean.
Some good. I know
baseball needs a hero.
Up.
They
yes.
do. They need somebody to come up with you know, two guys on and two outs and two strikes in the ninth and pull a Kirk Gibson and hit it out of the park and then be the hero that everybody will remember as this is the guy who said whatever he had to say, and he appealed to the common sensibilities of both sides, and there was a compromise reached because somebody led us in that direction. Who is going to be the leader? Who is going to lead Major League Baseball out of this? Because right now, this is not looking good. I'm less optimistic than I was yesterday, and I don't want to overreact to a tweet, but I guess I'm overreacting to a tweet. Max Scherzer, what he had to say did not sound like somebody who was talking in the spirit of compromise at all.
All right. We're going to shift gears. We're going to start talking about some concerns with college sports, and we are delighted we're going to be able to talk to Dr. Preeti Malini, who you see her on CNN and talking on all the networks, and a consultant from the University of Michigan with the Big Ten, and we'll get some answers and hopefully get a better understanding of what's happening and what the concerns are. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
You can definitely test both teams. You can test the officials and everybody. Can you test 100,000 fans coming into a stadium? Probably not. You know, that's probably not without a vaccine. You probably couldn't do that. So, yeah, to answer your question, heck yeah, be comfortable coaching a game without any fans. If the choice were play in front of no fans or not play, then I would choose to play in front of no fans. And I think darn near every guy I've talked to on our team, that's the way they feel about it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. That is the voice of Jim Harbaugh. Always a joy to hear from the former Bear, even if Michigan needs a Michigan man. We're delighted to welcome in Dr. Preeti Malani. She is the chief medical person with the University of Michigan, who's also advising the Big Ten, the Big Ten commissioner. She joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Dr. Malani.
Good morning.
So much to go over here, so much that we don't understand. You hear Jim Harbaugh talking there. You know, difficult to imagine the Big House with fans in it. I mean, you're talking about 100,000 plus people. We're talking about a global pandemic. Just a hard idea to get across in your mind. And he says they're willing to play without fans, and I don't know that he'll have a choice.
Yeah, well, I think all of this is difficult to get your head around. And, you know, when you think about what has happened in the past couple months, really every aspect of our lives has been changed probably forever in some ways, not just my world of healthcare, but really how we learn, how we work, how we interact with one another. And, you know, there's just a lot we just don't know right now. And the approach that we've been taking on everything, not just sports and return to sports, but education or even return to work, has been like, okay, what's the next step, and let's get there, and then we'll think about that later.
Preeti, it's great to talk to you. I don't think people in the audience know that you were a Northwestern grad. You have your master's in journalism from Medill, a classmate of mine back in the day, and you transitioned into medicine, and you're the only doctor I know that has a master's in journalism. So you're prepared for some of these questions you're receiving on the media tour, whether it's CNN or Wall Street Journal or here this morning. I guess I wonder, when you're asked questions from coaches at Michigan, when you have an audience with these people, what are the kinds of things they're asking you and their concerns as they kind of prepare themselves and prepare their teams for the uncertainty ahead?
Yeah, thank you, David. And it's so great to connect with you. This has been one of the joys in the last few years was, you know, we went to school in a time when we didn't have all the connections, social media and things. And, you know, this has been one of the pleasures to reconnect with you and actually see you in person a couple of years ago. Regarding the coaches and their concerns, so a lot of my interaction is indirect with, although I was part of their head coaches meeting a couple days ago. I do work closely with our athletic director, Ward Manuel, who's become a good friend, his leadership team, the team physicians, and then one of my colleagues, Dr. Rob Ernst, who heads up health and wellness for all the students and our health service. And, you know, I'll tell you, we're just trying to figure out the next steps. The questions, you know, obviously, I will say everyone has put health and safety first, and everyone understands that. They express a clear understanding that this is a difficult situation without any answers. But one of the questions I got the other day was just about COVID and where things are with treatments and vaccines. So that was good. But I would say the biggest question is just, when can the student athletes be back on campus? When can they begin training, and what might that look like? And we've done, I think, a good job as a community to draw a distinction between that return to training and a return to competition. I will say that I think the return to training is something that is within sight. It wasn't a few months ago, even probably a few weeks ago. But now as we're starting to get back to work and get back to learning, you can envision a system where you can at least do something that follows public health guidance. It doesn't get rid of all risk, but at least it gets it to a point where you can think about it. At Michigan, there's not a final timeline. We're still under a stay-at-home order until at least June 12th. And I think once that lifts, we'll start thinking about bringing the students back to think about training. And again, it'll look different. And also the students that might have been injured, student athletes, getting them back to make sure that they get the good rehab, because that's another thing. You know, that is something that we think a lot about competition, but a lot of them might have had surgery off season, and, you know, they need to get that training to get back. So the questions have been really thoughtful ones.
You know, I got to tell you, I worry when I look out at the world and I see people kind of not even tentatively about taking steps to get back, and the differences in different states. And I worry that people aren't asking the right questions.
I'm glad to hear that that at least the people that you're dealing with are asking the right questions. But is it possible that that we're not asking the right questions? Are the right questions things like can this be somehow transmitted during a football game, during the closeness of the sport? Is it more dangerous? Is it less? I don't know what the questions are that we need to be asking.
Yeah, and one of the things that I say whenever I get a chance in every single venue is that we can do our best to decrease risk, but we can't eliminate it. And with sports, you can do things like be outside, which decreases risk. You can screen people. You can do some testing on potentially the student athletes, although that isn't perfect either. But you can do daily health screening. You can try to work in social distancing. But that's hard because, you know, the sports require you to be close together. You can limit numbers. You can sort of say, okay, you 10 people are a group. You're a family, and you're going to continue to train together and work together. And you're not going to have as much interaction with others. We can improve cleaning and disinfection and make sure people have the right type of personal protective equipment. And, you know, I think a lot about our coaching staff, too, not just the student athletes, because they're right there also. And many of them are probably at higher risk than our student athletes, although we don't fully understand risk. So that's difficult. But one of the biggest things is changing our culture around coming to practice if you're ill, even mildly ill. And I could say the same thing in medicine because, you know, I've worked ill because it was just part of, like, you're not sick enough unless you're in the hospital yourself. You're not sick enough to miss work. And I think it's probably the same in a lot of sports where there's a culture around toughing it up and just coming in. But in terms of the questions, it is hard because it's not just like people living in a bubble, particularly student athletes, because they are student athletes, and we have 31 sports. We tend to think about a couple of those sports more than others. We have almost 1,000 student athletes. They are, you know, in engineering and nursing and every sport you can imagine, and they're interacting with other people. So some of the questions that I think about is, you know, if you did have an outbreak related to sports, either competition or training, what kind of risk would that bring into the community? So there are a lot of unknowns, but I do think there are some things you can do to manage that, but you can't eliminate it.
So Preeti, as you consider these risks and you deal with this uncertainty, from your perspective, I know you're at the University of Michigan, and I know that, you know, people who live in Ann Arbor may look at things that happen on the Ohio State campus with a little bit of a jaded eye or a different perspective. But on one hand, you've got Ohio State talking about how they can get 20,000 fans conceptually into the stadium to watch football in the fall. And on the other, you have Michigan really, you know, sounding more of a cautious note with the president saying, you know, until the students are back on campus, we don't really want to consider the football realities. And I think that those are two pretty extremes. And from your perspective, what was your reaction to Ohio State talking in those terms, and then obviously reaffirming your beliefs and what you heard from your boss, essentially?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Michigan hasn't made any decision about the fall, although there's a lot of homework being done right now, a lot of very smart people who are thinking about every scenario, because no matter what, the semester is not going to be like a normal semester. And there is a desire to safely bring the students back to campus to have some type of residential experience. But again, that decision is not made. It will be made in the coming weeks by our president in coordination with many other leaders of the university. And I'm involved with some of those discussions. And it's mind-boggling to think about all the different things. And, you know, David, we talked a little bit about the Big Ten Commission, and if I could just talk about that a bit. It's interesting, you know, the Big Ten Commissioner put together this task force for emerging infectious diseases, and the 14 members, you know, we share, like, more than geography, and 13 of the 14 are big public institutions, like the state school, big numbers of people. And of course, Northwestern is a large school also in and of itself in a complicated place. And, you know, it's been interesting because I think people within that Big Ten family in the last few days, I've heard Michigan State, Indiana, and Purdue sort of come out with statements saying, we're coming back to campus in the fall. but I haven't seen a lot of detail. And, you know, I suspect that any discussion around competition is a little bit theoretical. I'm a little just suspect about anything that, because it's so far out and so much can change. And frankly, you know, we're seeing around our country, although Michigan and, you know, thankfully Chicago, like, we're in a good place in terms of viral transmission. But things are still kind of shut down. And as you start opening things up, that gap between having control and then things being in an outbreak setting and having to go back home and back to our houses is a narrow gap. So, you know, I listen with interest, but I know that the folks at Ohio State are extremely thoughtful.
I think that's got to be as difficult an element of this as any. If you're Kevin Warren and you're the Big Ten commissioner trying to figure out how you're getting everyone back or when you're getting them back, there's such a difference in different states. And I don't know how you advise him about those differences. I mean, you must have, like, when you talk to him, you must be saying, hey, this is the medical reality. Let's not worry about who's opening when, where, and how.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, this is a really interesting group, and we meet by phone. So I actually don't even know what other people look like, but it's been a great opportunity to trade notes. Initially around things like even like building field hospitals, and of course now the focus has been shifted to return to training, and I think a lot of the schools are starting to get that aspect set. As a group, we've put together this playbook, which is still, it's in draft form, but it's you know, it's like a little guide on some of the things you can do around best practices. And what I like is that it very much says, think about this, consider, could, maybe. It doesn't actually say that you must do this, which is, of course, with NCAA rules, there are a lot of things that you must do. And I'm finding that out with my discussions with our athletics leadership. But, you know, in terms of Commissioner Warren, you know, I have to say I'm just so struck by his thoughtfulness and his genuine concern for well-being, not just during competition, but globally. And he has done a really good job, in my mind, of articulating the importance of sports, not just as competition and business, which, of course, it is, but the equity and social justice aspects and what college sports do for student-athletes and the power of the experience, particularly in the Big Ten, which is, you know, really the finest institutions academically in the country. And, you know, one of the stories that he shared, it really stays with me, was about his son who plays football at Mississippi State. And he talked about how his son would bring home his teammates during breaks because, one, they didn't really have anywhere to go. He talked about how a lot of the student athletes had never really had a stable home or even a bed in some cases. And again, I think those stories are not stories that everyone thinks about. So, you know, getting the students back to training means getting them sometimes to a much better place that's conducive to learning also. And again, I think the path is complicated. We focus a lot on football. I'm personally like love football. We focus on that, but it's really all sports. And in terms of the interaction with the group, there are physicians, there are public health individuals, there's a compliance person on the group. And there really hasn't been a clear discussion about what the season's going to look like. But I will say that when we first started meeting, which was as the Big Ten tournament for basketball was just getting going, the commissioner said something to me that I had, like, sort of shocked me, where he said, you know, we're not even sure we'll be back in the fall or even next spring. And the idea of the unknown, he put that out there in a way that I had not at that moment thought about it. And so I think clearly he's getting a lot of good input, not just from our commission, our task force, but also the NCAA, and they also have a number of other experts. So anyway, that's kind of a long answer, but it's right now I think the focus is squarely like, let's get people back to campus safely and think about some type of return to training.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Really appreciate it.
Great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
That is Preeti Malani, doctor from Michigan. I mean, we're very lucky to have someone like that, David, to have your connections to get someone with that kind of knowledge, and it's just extraordinary.
She's smart. She was like one of those students. She's like, what are you doing in journalism school?
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
I've been in touch with a couple of those type players, and they don't think it's so bad, and they're saying, let's get ready to go and play. However, I do think in this case, the MLB union leadership is pretty strong. The players on the negotiating committee are Scherzer, Andrew Miller, star players making not just seven figures, but eight figures. So I do think this will not be accepted, and they will negotiate off of this.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are delighted to welcome in MLB Network analyst Harold Reynolds. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Harold, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Harold.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we love talking to you, honestly, all the time that we can. And certainly we look at what's going on in baseball right now. And I think everyone was very optimistic until we got to the financial stuff. And everybody was hopeful that they were getting into agreement mode with the DH and talking about the 67 pages and the health and medical concerns. And now here we are. And, you know, it just seems like you couldn't have more polar opposites when it comes to reaching some sort of resolution on the financial stuff.
Well, you know, I've always, you know, look, I went through three strikes and was locked out once. So 4 years of my 12 years of major league career was in turbulent negotiations. And the way I look at it, there's always one common ground. You want to get back to playing baseball. And that's still the same fact here. The biggest factor is health and safety. You know, once you get that piece figured out, and we don't know how that's going to work out yet, but I think everybody in the whole country is working towards that. And if we can get that piece figured out, the finances will take care of itself. And the disappointment for me is they've ran out with the finances first, and that's the most public thing out there. And that really should be the thing you talk about behind closed doors. But when you got a country with 39 million people that are unemployed and trying to figure out how to live and stay afloat, the last thing you want to hear is about, I got to get my millions to play baseball. And at the end of the day, it is a game. We got to figure it out. But the health and safety is the key. And I think once they get that, everything else will take care of itself.
I tend to agree with you, Harold, but I think the fact that they're not arguing over health and safety, and we're seeing headlines by Max Scherzer and talking about they're not willing to go back to with a counteroffer because they were so disappointed with the owner's proposal at first. If a player came to you today and said, okay, what are we doing wrong here? What would you tell us to do next? How would you answer that?
Well, I went through a strike that was 60-something days. Everyone is different. I had a strike that was 2 days long. So each one of those is different. I think what I would say to players is open your eyes. You got to look around. You know, everybody's going to have to make an adjustment. As a player, I never, ever believed that owners didn't have money or that they were losing money. But this is different, man. The whole world's getting hit. And so you have to make adjustments, and everybody has to adjust. And I understand the players made an agreement on what they felt the financial structure was going to be back in March or whenever they did the first deal. But how much has our world changed since March? We're not living in the same world even today as it was 2 days ago. You know, so I think you got to make adjustments. And at the end of the day, both sides are just going to have to figure it out. And if you don't, then the alternative is you don't play. And if this continues to sink and the economy continues to do that, nobody's going to make money. You're going to be losing billions. And if they lose billions, some players are not playing ever again. You know, I remember in 94 when Bud Selig came out and said, there's no World Series. We're sitting there in August going, what are you talking about? We didn't play again until 95. And about 100 guys lost jobs. They didn't play ever again in the big leagues. I never played ever again in the big leagues after 94 strike.
Wow.
Because they are going to financially cut somebody out. And as once the truth comes to the top, somebody's gone. So I think the players are missing it here. That if you want to stand on your, you know, I got to have mine and get yours, and everybody does. I get it. But there is adjustments that everybody's going to have to make for the betterment of the game, or somebody's not playing ever again. That will be the case. Somebody will not play ever again.
It's hard to separate what's happening right now to what's coming up in the future. And I think that one of the reasons players may be reluctant to cut a deal that they need to cut is because they worry about what's going to happen after 2021. And maybe ownership is reluctant to open up books or anything. Not that they ever have, but they might be more aware of what's coming. Is the labor storm of the future affecting the current labor storm?
Yeah, I think it is, but I think everybody's got to live in the present, you know, owners and players. I really think you got to get something done for what's happening right now, and we'll figure out the next deal later. I really don't think you can sit here and negotiate looking at 2023, 24, 25. We have no idea what the world is going to be. Because right now we don't have a vaccine, you know, so we don't even know. We're talking about sports. I'm talking about teachers, doctors, front offices, the grocery clerk, everybody. We have no idea what's going to happen next summer, let alone this summer. And that's what I think baseball and all sports, not just baseball, but basketball, football, everybody has to look at the reality of, do we want to get on the field and figure it out right now? And you deal with the next step next. That's what you have to do. You can't sit here and go, well, all right, we're going to negotiate for 2025. We have no idea what it's going to look like. I don't sit here. I would have never thought Mike Trout was going to get $500 million as a player. Wow. But I can't honestly sit here and think Mookie Betts is getting $400,000 right now, which I would have said last year, hands down. The world is changing. I think people have to wake up and really recognize that. And I'm a little disappointed in the fact that nobody's living in the here and now, and they're all looking at it from a different perspective. And you have to kind of look at, this is a here and now deal. How do we deal with this now? We need to get out of it, and then we'll deal with our future when we see what it is.
Talking with Harold Reynolds from the MLB Network, and Harold has partnered with Huddle, a sports analysis software company, highlighting the need for players to be seen in baseball and softball. Visit huddle.com/baseball to learn how players can use Huddle's digital platform to create a national profile and be seen at their best by coaches, scouts, and evaluators. And Harold, along those lines, you know, we talk about Major League Baseball, minor league baseball not being a thing this summer. What does that do long term to the development of prospects and the growth of the sport?
Well, that's one of the reasons I teamed up with Huddle. And, you know, Huddle is the largest recruiting platform in the country for football, basketball, soccer, lacrosse, you name it. They got 7 million kids on there. So all of us know, if you want to continue to advance, whether it's youth ball or travel ball or high school or college, you have to be seen. And unfortunately, this spring, kids didn't get a chance to get out and play. And particularly in Chicago and even here in the Northeast where I live in Jersey, they didn't even get on the field. And so how are you going to be seen? How are you going to be evaluated? So the beauty of baseball is you can do that through video. And as I get ready for the draft right now, I'm just looking at video. I didn't get a chance to go watch anybody play this spring. So I'm looking at their video, and I'm being able to evaluate it. Well, coaches, recruiters, everybody else doing the same thing. And so that's why the Huddle platform is so powerful, because you got 7 million kids on that site and coaches go to it. So that's an opportunity for you to be seen. Just go to huddle.com. That's my spiel on that, but I'll tie it into where we're at, is that as I get ready for the draft and as we move forward in this deal, minor league baseball and everything else, there's no minor league season right now. There's no baseball anywhere. And this is going to be tough for everybody to dig out. And as we go through this, the business model that you went into this whole thing with is not going to stand. And the same thing with baseball. We've been leaning a lot towards analytics, And now you have no other choice but to be able to try to evaluate guys through video. So we're going to be in this for a couple of years. The draft's 5 rounds this year. And next year, I don't see it being back to 40 rounds. We don't know what ground we're standing on, and we don't even know how you see those youngsters coming along. So it's just different, and I feel for the kids. If this happened when I was playing back in the day, I'd have been in deep trouble when I was in high school. But now you got video. At least that's a weapon you can use that can really give you an opportunity to continue to keep moving forward, and that's why it's important.
Harold, we'll let you go. What's your gut feeling? Is this getting resolved, or are we in trouble here?
No, we're going to play. We're going to play. I'll end it with what I started with. If we can show that you can be healthy and safe and we get to that point, we're going to play. I don't think there's much choice left. We have to get the game back going, and there's too many variables moving forward to make that happen. So, yeah, I think July, August, hopefully we'll be on the field playing baseball and we won't be discussing this.
Thanks, Harold.
Harold, thanks a ton. Okay, great guys. Talking to you. Take
Good
care.
Stuff.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye. That is Harold Reynolds. Always a joy to talk to him. All right. I want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
And thanks to our guy, Dustin Rhodes, our executive producer.
He made that crap up.
And, of course, Kev Bowe. He is,
good young man who's gone through hell.
He's our maven of sound. And Ray does it all. Ray, bless you, sir.
Thanks, Ray.
He's quite a guy and quite a character.
He is a character. David, have yourself a great day. Enjoy your life, for God's sake.
You too, Mully. Take care.
All right. Talk to you soon. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
That segment brought to you by North Shore University Health Systems.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.